Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaritamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Bottom of 69. The purport of the entire Gita is that the present habit of a person can never be discarded at once. The Kshatriya nature Arjuna could not accept immediately the renunciation, which is a fruit of constant endeavors of endurance, restraint, forgiveness, etc., which are the brahminical qualities. Therefore, the essential advice of Gita is that, however lowly may be the present habit of a person, he should start his upward journey from that very platform of his existence. He should practice proper renunciation and make endeavor according to the natural course of development. Without abiding to this procedure, if a person hurriedly discards his present habit, that discordance will become either impassionable or vicious and will not be fruitful. If anybody has any doubt about this explanation, let them study Bhagavad Gita. So he mentions words proper renunciation. So he's in his situation, but the renunciation is proper, or appropriate for that situation. So it's not that starting one's situation means there's no renunciation. It just means that the renunciation starts from that position. Does that make sense? Yeah. Then, without abiding by it, that discordance between, you know, the natural development and the proper renunciation, if that's not balanced, if he doesn't start that, the natural cultivation and the natural renunciation from the position that he's at, then you're impassionable or vicious. So it's either he'll lose all enthusiasm and won't be inspired because he's only inspired by his conditioning. Or that desire will become, you know, so strong because he's not dealing with it and just always thinking about it till it overwhelms. Right? So you get one of those two. Like you see, the person, he's living at his house, you know, he goes to school, he has his, you know, things, he does his things, and he shows up on the weekend, he's really enthusiastic, he's always doing everything, very reliable, you know, really is involved, puts in money, time, even sometimes brings his friends. But now if you're so inspired, hey, why don't you move into the temple? But he's not actually in the position for that. He moves in the temple, now he just becomes lazy and spaced out and doesn't know what to do, because it was more than what he was able to handle. Does that make sense? So that's the impassionable. It just is not, there's no drive, you know, or vicious, he gives it up, but he's always thinking about it, and then it's just overwhelming, and so then they disappear after that one. When Lord Krishna had concluded his teachings in Bhagavad Gita, if anyone has doubt about this explanation, let them study Bhagavad Gita and Uddhava Gita, right? So in both cases, Krishna is speaking, right, to his close devotee. When Lord Krishna had concluded his teaching in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna spoke these words, Bhagavad Gita 18:73. My dear Krishna, O infallible one, my illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt, and am prepared to act according to your instructions. Right. So, He's regained his memory by Krishna's grace. So it's only by the Lord's grace, by that endeavor, he's pleased. Right? Then he's free from doubt. Now he doesn't have any ideas how he's going to enjoy himself. right? You know, and how he's going to benefit on the material platform. So he's free from illusion, right? And then because the illusion isn't there, he can look at it as it is and see that it's not necessary. Right, his whole lamentation about he's going to lose the family members and all that, because it's his duty, so this is how it works. So now he's prepared to act according to his instructions. But the doubts get in the way, the illusion gets in the way. Right? But if one's willing to give that up, then by the Lord's mercy, the illusion is gone, but you still have to act. Right? Because others, the illusion may be gone, but they're still not interested to act because it'll be too much trouble. Right? Does that make sense? We're willing to take trouble for something that you know, interests us. So that's passion. So giving up the endeavor because you're not interested in the trouble itself, that's also passion. Passion means trouble. Right? So you're either doing it, that's because of passion, so you're willing to go through the trouble, or due to passion, you're not willing to go through the trouble because you don't see the result for yourself. Does that make sense? In Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29-40, Uddhava asked Lord Krishna, "Obeisances unto you, O greatest of yogis, please instruct me, who am in surrendered unto you. How may I have understand undeviating attachment to your lotus feet?" After hearing the Gita, Arjuna engaged in the activities of Kshatriya. After hearing the Gita, Uddhava renounced the world. Uddhava was ready to accept renunciation. Right? So now it's like I'm free from doubt, so I'm willing to engage my activities nicely. Right? So one, the devotion is there, but you see is that now he's willing for that aspect of retraction. Right? While Uddhava, he's surrendered, now he's dealing with the attraction. Right? So how to develop the attachment for Krishna? Well, Arjuna said, now I'm free from illusion, so I'm giving up my attachment, so now I'm ready to act. Does that make difference? So technically they're in the same position, but we see as the focus, that means that's why the Gita is the preliminary to the Bhagavatam, and this Uddhava Gita is the conclusion of the Bhagavatam. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's what the nine cantos are doing before the tenth. They're showing how the process of retraction is applied for whatever the situation, and how that attraction to Krishna is the most important element. Right? Knowing that, then one can appreciate the tenth canto. And then the 11th canto is all the technical points. Right? Technically how to apply that already, you know, willing surrender. Right? How to apply it into the situation. So then it's like at the end of the Gita, you get all the technical points. Right? But the technical point is the detail. It's only valuable if you accept the original plan. Right? Does that make sense? You know, like we're hearing in strategic planning, that you have your, you know, figure out the field where you want to go and make a plan to get there. But they leave it at that. Right? So, which is fine. That's what you're dealing with. But then, discussing with Tattva the other day, and then he was mentioning that where this strategic planning came from was from the military. It wasn't originally from business. It's from military. But the military, they don't see it as just one linear thing. They see it as that you know, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, but at three levels. Right? You have your overall plan, then you have your specific for that general situation, then you have the detail. So you have to see all three in each one. You know, so you have, okay, how we're going to deal with this country, right? And then right now there's this particular battle going on in this country. Right? And so is that worthwhile to get involved? And then on the battlefield, exactly, you know, who's going where and who's going to do what. So they have those three levels. So if you've accepted the top one, then the other ones have meaning. So that's the point, is unless you've accepted the premise of Gita, that surrender to the Lord, then the details of the last chapters don't have any meaning. Right? If we haven't accepted that all our activities are to be engaged in the Lord's service in the first six chapters, you know, then the last doesn't have any meaning. Right? And if all that's not for serving the Lord in devotion in the middle chapters, then those conclusions in the 18th chapter don't have any meaning. Right? Because it's combining those two. Right? You have your endeavor through the conditioned nature and then pure devotion. So the point is by performing those duties in pure devotion, or acting in pure devotion by performance of your duties, then those points in the 18th chapter have meaning. Right? Because that's how you're going to surrender to Krishna and be involved in His service. So, does that make sense? So then this is taking it now, how to go beyond that. So it's the same topic, the Bhagavad Gita and Uddhava Gita. When we say same topic, that doesn't mean it's the same thing. It's the same thing, just continuing on. Right? But the levels are because of us, not because of Arjuna or Uddhava. Right? They're being spoken for our benefit. After hearing the Gita, Arjuna engaged in the activities of Kshatriya. After hearing the Gita, Uddhava renounced the world. Uddhava was ready to accept renunciation. Had he engaged in Kshatriya activities, it would have been detrimental to his own nature. Similarly, the acceptance of renunciation by Arjuna would have been absurd, right? Because Uddhava is a minister, right? So he's a Brahmin, right? Arjuna is a Kshatriya. So the point is the point being made here is not, oh, but devotee can do anything. The point being made here is you start from your position. Right, so Arjuna started. Where is Arjuna at the time of the Bhagavad Gita being spoken?
The imminence of war.
Yes, and where does he apply it?
There.
Yeah, right there at the war. Right. So the point is and Uddhava is there with Krishna when Krishna is about to leave. Right. So the instructions that he gets are for that particular moment. Means they'll take you all the way through, but he has to apply him at the moment that he's at. Right? So he's a Brahmin. Krishna's leaving. His service is to Krishna. So that's his service within this world. So therefore, if Krishna's going, he doesn't need to perform that service. So he's ready for renunciation. So he starts from renunciation. Arjuna starts from the proper performance of his particular occupational duty. Does that make sense? Because, as we remember, is that the performance of the duty can be connected to the Lord. The renunciation is connected to the Lord, because they're both the elements of retraction. Right? Because you're connecting to the Lord. But the point is here, is that the performance of the duties, they have meaning in their full form as an act of grihastha. Right? But if one retires from that, they're not necessary anymore. Right? Because now he can do that. Arjuna will do that. At the end of the Mahabharata, they also do that. Because then by performance of duty, he's ready for that. But he's not doing it when the battle takes place. Right? Because most of the Mahabharata actually is the battle. Right? And so the Gita is spoken before the battle. You know, so the Gita is actually quite early in the Mahabharata. Right, but the Pandavas leaving and going to the forest, that will be at the very end. Right. Right. Similarly, the acceptance of in Bhagavad Gita 18:47, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, "It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Prescribed duties according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions." Right? There's no sin in performing your duties. It doesn't mean that there's not a result, but there's no sinful reaction. You understand? Let us say, hard in our environment to find a mixed example that isn't accepted as normal. Okay, the Grihastha is doing, he's a Vaishya and he's doing business. Okay, so for doing business there is no sin. It's his occupation. It doesn't mean that there's not a result from it. He works good, he gets good result. He works bad, he gets bad result. Or, does that make sense? So there won't, that means there'll be a response, but it will keep you in the material world. But the point is that there's no sin. Does that make sense? Now let's say you have a brahmachari and he's doing business, but not for the temple, not for authority, but for himself. Right? But he's not a grihastha. He's, you know, he's working under, he's under the protection of the temple. So for him, it's not a matter of just he gets a result. It's sinful. It's a, he'll get a sinful reaction because he'll get the results of the business, but he'll also get a sinful reaction while the Vaishya won't. Right? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? But he's doing business for the temple or for some project like that. It's not his money. Then he's still acting as a brahmachari and engaging his conditioned nature as a Vaishya. You know what I'm saying? So it's not so traditional, but it'll work. Because the essential element of the brahmachari is that, you know, he's a menial servant. That's in place. Does that make sense?
In the case of the Vaishya, if he chooses a good business or bad business, then that's also will be what you call the result.
Yeah, that'll be the result. But it's not sinful. No, but selling alcohol, then you take on by the nature of the thing itself. It's not by doing business with alcohol. It's that the alcohol itself carries a bad reaction. Because as Preeti Maharaj is pointing out, the person who directs it, the person who supports it, and the person who does it, they get the reaction. So he's making the point is that he is the king, is giving direction. Now, and he's speaking this to the sages who are at the yajna. And, I mean, in the presence of the sages, to the common person. Right? So now, if the common person follows his example, then he who directed it and the sages who support it, everybody there will get the benefit. Right? Does that make sense? So, because the alcohol is a sinful aspect of life. So therefore, because he's manufacturing, so basically he's supporting it or sanctioning it. So therefore, the people who buy it, then he'll share in some of their reactions. So there, it's considered bad money. Right? You know, so when Srila Prabhupada got a donation from such a gentleman who owned a big, you know, distillery, they're very wealthy, wealthy people. And so he didn't personally use that money to direct how, what would happen to it. You know, he simply gave it to the deities. He just put it in the donation box. Right? Because then it's given to Krishna, then it's purified, then the temple authorities use it, then there's no reaction. Because otherwise what he would do on these donations would keep it and then use it for specific projects around the society on his direction. But then it's considered within his control. So whoever's controlling it gets a reaction. But once it's been given away properly in charity, it's purified. So if you gave it to the deities, then there's no, you know, problem at all. If you gave it to an elevated Brahmin, that elevated Brahmin has to deal with the sinful reaction. Then it's purified. Then who he gives it to, it's not. So he gives it to one, they give it to another, then, you know what I'm saying, just like he gives it away, then he's freed from it.
So in this case, the business is not what generates, it's the intrinsic bad element.
Yeah, it means what you're dealing in, you know, what is that used for. No, the business is business. That's why it doesn't matter if you're selling alcohol or cars or clothes or food. It's the technique is the same. Buy it cheaper than you sell it and make sure that you have a market to sell it to. That's all you're trying to do. you know. So as long as you follow that, it works. Right? So basically, Kali Yuga, alcohol has no problem finding a market. Right. Yes?
Maharaj, can you give an example of a sinful being affected of by a sinful reaction for a devotee? What would it mean? That, for example, if we have one of nature of Shudra doing business, so the sinful reaction from doing...
It's not his duty.
Yes.
So it will be contaminating to the mind. You know, so then he'll become, why would the Shudra do business?
For greed.
Yeah, so that means that will increase. Well, the Vaishya, if he's not greedy, he doesn't do his service. So you want Vaishyas to be greedy. Then they're enthusiastic. But you want that they should give in charity. You know? You know what I'm saying? So what happens here is this becoming impassionate. Let's say the Vaishya, you know, on, you know, a good day decides, hey, I can do this business for the temple. Okay? Or I want to be involved with, you know, the projects of the temple, so I want to give some money. So he's telling this to the temple authorities. So what's the first sentence that's going to come out of their mouth as far as how much you should give? 50%, okay? Now, these authorities have no idea about business. You know, zero would be a euphemism. Okay? So they mean 50% of what?
Gross.
Gross, okay. And so not profit. So if you take 50% of gross, then what happens to the business?
It's negative.
It's negative. It folds immediately. So therefore, the Vaishya does not want to get involved. Right? So he'll give up, or he'll just kind of do it and not, you know, because point is that there's no, you know, so what happens is it's not looked at, okay, he'll give, let's say, even he makes, how do you say, instead of he's giving 75, he's giving 50% of his profit, okay? So when he say it, okay, I'll know, but that won't work, it's 50% of profit, and if you can get him to agree, fine. But now, let us say he makes $10,000, right? So then the temple gets 5, he gets 5. Okay. You know, it works. It doesn't look like it. Now, you know, by reinvesting and all that, now he makes 20, you know, he gets 10, the temple gets 10. Then he makes more, so then they get 25. So after a while they start, why is he getting so much? You know, he had 5 before, he should be happy with a 5. You know, so you get this much, so in other words he gets a salary, which makes him into a Shudra, so therefore as a Vaishya you can't be inspired. You know, his point is, you know, the temple has got $25,000, you know, and I've got $25,000. That's my reward, is that I get 25. So they get 100,000, he gets 100,000, but the problem as it gets bigger, we don't want them to have it because we think it's just gross sense, God, why they should have, should be for Krishna. But it's just this element of control. The point is why is he inspired? He's inspired because he's getting 100,000. Therefore, you got. You don't want him to get 100,000, he won't be inspired, you won't get either. So you say, no, you won't get this much, he won't continue to do it. Right? So that's the point, is this balance of the renunciation and the engagement. You know? That should always be seen, is how much they can handle. So they can do that. They can give whatever they can when they can. Then that works. But if you demand something that's not reasonable, and it will therefore make them not inspired. Right? But otherwise, if you're going to take so much, you better be so spiritually inspiring that he wants to surrender like that. Not that you forced him to. Right? Nobody works when they're forced to surrender. That's for Shudras, right? Dvijas are only inspired if they're inspired to surrender. The Shudras will also do better, but generally they can't complain. Does that make sense? But the Dvijas, they have to want to surrender. You know what I'm saying? It means if, like go back to our example yesterday. You're having a revolution, right? Who's running the revolution? The bourgeois, right? So they're intelligent, they've been educated, they have some facility, right? They're not just a guy off the street, generally speaking, Right? I'm sure that if you look historically, I mean, Spartacus wasn't. He was a king. Spartacus was a king. And then he got captured, made into a slave. And then he started a rebellion that was 60 or 70,000 freed slaves fighting against the Roman army. So you could say he was just a common man. No, he was a king. Like that. So we'll take that example back. So when it comes to mind. But is it an emergency? If it's not an emergency, then you work to find someone who can do it. If it's an emergency, anybody can do it. But as soon as the emergency's over, then it has to go back to normal. Right? Just like, let's say, a Brahmin, it's an emergency, there's no way to make money, so he starts a business. So then that's not wrong. But when he could do his own brahminical duties and he prefers to stay as a businessman, then it becomes sinful. Like that. There's emergency and there's normal. And Yudhishthira Maharaj says many times, you might find it reverses. What is actually pious when things are normal is actually sinful when things are abnormal. And I'm just saying is that anytime you deal with morality, then it always, what? Like that. Supposed to blink the eyes also. What? Yeah. He's saying the point that what may be pious in normal times, when it's abnormal times or emergency, it may be considered sinful. Does that make sense? When things aren't normal means it's an emergency. Therefore, what would normally not be done is done, and what normally is done is not done. Maybe. It's just like, let's say there's a fire in the house, right? And people are asleep. You're not supposed to wake up people when they're asleep. But so then would you stand there? Well, actually, according to Shastra, you're not supposed to wake somebody. If you wake somebody, then, you know, there'll be this kind of reaction, so better I don't wake them. Right? So it doesn't matter then. So that applies when things are normal. But when things are not normal, then things don't necessarily work in that way. Does that make sense? Right.
And usually as a new devotee, there is supposed to be out on sankirtan.
Right.
It's a difficult thing for him. Or like the person is a cook. He has inclination to that, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you have the element of, if you can plan it nicely, then whatever nature or things a person's inclined at, when they take up Krishna consciousness, you engage them according to that, then things will go very smoothly. But things that are like the Bhagavat elements, those anybody can do. You just have to find for them how they can do it. In other words, generally when you have the person, you know, the big book distributor come to the temple and give you tips on, you know, how to distribute books and stuff, they'll do it according to their nature. Right? And so they're bold, outgoing, talkative person like that. But there's a good chance they were like that before they joined also. So the thing is the trick would be how to find a way that the person who's shy could distribute a book. Because the point is the person who's shy has different qualities. So the person who's bold and active, then he can convince, he can do things, but you may, depending upon what kind of bold, you may or may not be comfortable when they first walk up. But because they're good at talking, they'll convince you and all that, and it works out. But the shy person, no one feels uncomfortable next to a shy person. So technically the shy person could approach anybody that the bold person couldn't. But if you look at what's the principle that's going on, then you can find it. But if you simply look at technique, then it won't work. If you don't have that nature, you can't do it. Therefore, there's one class of book distributor. You know what I'm saying? But if they were clever, then you'd find what's the root principles, then anybody could distribute books using their own nature. You know what I'm saying? So that would be cultivated along with whatever they're comfortable with to dynamically engage, because they have that mentality, so they do those. So if you have that facility, great. If not, it'll come up later. You know, or maybe Krishna wants you to disconnect you from that, because maybe by doing that, you'll stay in that conditioned kind of mentality. But by doing something else, then it breaks you away from that. You don't have your normal material shelter. So therefore, you depend more on Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that it will be wrong, but if that nature, if you see this impassion, you know, the lack of passion or that viciousness of the desire starts coming up, then you know that they're not rightly situated. You know, the person's a cook, but you have him doing something else. If it's going smoothly, then it doesn't matter. But if you see it starts to get, you know, he's having problems, he's not so steady, he's having problems with other devotees, then you should put him in the kitchen. Yes. Well, the funny thing is he was one of the shyest kids in the school. Yeah, so that's the thing. It's just you leave it long enough. But there are certain situations where he just won't talk. But if he's really comfortable, then he'll... So how it works, very hard to tell. No, I'm just saying the next point. A person who is not aware of his own status is not trustworthy, because he can perform all types of irregular activities. So if someone doesn't actually know what their situation is materially in varna and ashram, they're not actually trustworthy as far as the performance of those apara vidya duties, right? Because he knows his status as a devotee, I'm servant of Krishna. So to give a Bhagavatam class, to offer an arti, you know, to speak on the philosophy, then he can be said to be trustworthy. Right, as long as we see that he understands his own status as servant of Prabhupada and following in that line. Right? But if he doesn't understand it materially he's untrustworthy, because he'll get involved in all kinds of areas that he's not supposed to. That's where we see the difficulty comes in management and community. Because everybody wants to control everything when they don't have the capacity. So they're untrustworthy. That's why it says, because he can perform all kinds of irregular activities. Because it's not their nature, they'll stick to their nature. Like the king. Let's say there's a kshatriya who tells you he's going to do something. Right? And there's a vaishya who says he's going to do exactly the same thing. Right? They both promise to do a particular activity. Okay? Now, the kshatriya is doing it because, one, it's within duty, and two, it appears that there'll be some benefit. Right? You know, the other person will benefit, he'll benefit by doing his duty, everything will work out. Now, the vaishya also sees that, you know, it's beneficial, it's religious, but he'll get benefit. Okay. Now what happens after a few days goes by, you know, and before they're supposed to commit to the execution of this activity, then the situation changes, and by performing the activity, there'll be material loss. Okay? Now, will the kshatriya perform the activity? Yes. Will the vaishya? That's the point. Because he can do all kinds of irregular activity, because it's not his area. Right? So, but for the vaishya, if you look at it from, not dharma, but from artha, he did the right thing. So there's no sin. But if the kshatriya had looked at it from artha, because that's not his platform, his platform is dharma, then there's sin. Right? And if you're supposed to make money, he's looking at it from dharma, and then he loses the business, then the vaishya, that's sinful. Because he's not doing his duty. You understand? So the point is he has to make profit, so whatever it takes to make profit. The other one has to maintain religious principles, no matter what happens. Does that make sense?
So,
and if this Vaishya, he is the God, so he kind of transcends it and sees that more higher principle, the material laws is good.
Yeah, if he sees it in connection with, you know, some Krishna conscious development, then that can work.
It wouldn't
be sinful, but the point is what is his service? If it's giving money to the temple, then he loses all that money, then how can he do his service? You know what I'm saying? It may have been personally good for him, but his service is not lacking. So technically, that's not his best outlook. But if it would mean simply materially he wouldn't have something, but it doesn't affect his service to the deities, it would improve his personal development, but not reduce his service, then it's fine. Does that make sense? He was so renounced and so detached, so, you know, $20,000 he could have made for the temple, he didn't, because he was worried about his own personal, you know, upliftment. That's useless. The point is he's making money for the temple, he makes money. You know what I'm saying? Is that make sense? Now we shouldn't take the example and go the other way. No, but what happens if he gets into all sinful activities and this and that? No, it's we always have to understand is that the balance is what everybody's talking. Does that make sense? Balance is what's being talked about. Because always when you do, it'll always go one way or the other, right? We can never, the middle path is not, it's not an option, right? You know, where's the flavor? Where's the taste? Where's the intensity? You know, it's got to be this side or the other side. You know, all this balance stuff. You know, that's for old world or third world or some other world, but it's not for you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's just. Does that make sense? Yes. No.
I'm just thinking. For example, that same question.
That same Vaishya.
So, if he decides that he wants to invest in his spiritual life more.
But is that his position? It's just like, what happens if he decides he wants to, let's just adjust the scenario a little bit. He decides he wants to invest more in the spiritual development. And, you know, spending that time talking to his wife in the evening and off times, you know, dropping his kids off at school and all that, and, you know, making that extra endeavor to make the money for when they get to college, which is a million miles away. And so he decides he's going to go to the temple and sit in front of the deities and chant japa. And, you know, whoever comes in the temple, you know, take care of them and all that during the day. And then in the evening, then go back home, right? And then when he gets home, then he'll say hello to his wife, but then he'll immediately go to his room and study Bhagavad Gita. So is this okay? Okay. So therefore, apply the same thing to the same Vaishya. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point, is that the business has a place in the life. It's part of, means he has his occupation, he has his family, you know, and he has his personal development, you know. So he has to balance all three. So the point is how much one. So it's just like this. He's gotten newly married, you know. Now, before he got married, you know, all the time was basically to himself, except when he wanted to spend with the girl, and then it was spent, right? But it was his determination. But now he's married, and so he has so many things he'd like to do. But his wife doesn't want him to do it. She wants him to be around. Right? So he'll feel very restricted. Right? So now, but the point is, but after 5 years, then what's the situation?
Get out the door.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what are you sitting around here for, you know? You know, so in other words, he's the wife is comfortable. The things are stable and steady. The basic things are already established. They have an environment. So now all those other things he wanted to do, that's the time. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's a balance. It means if he was too push, now what will happen is when the wife wants him around, he wants to be free. And then when she finally says, okay, do what you want. What? You don't want me around anymore? She doesn't care anymore. This is not, you know what I'm saying? So that's the point. There's lack of balance one can't appreciate. If one dealt with the situation fully there, so he's fully taken care and attentive and all that, then when, as she starts to be more comfortable and give him more space, he'll be able to take advantage of the space and won't see it that she doesn't care. He's thinking, okay, now I can do all these different things. She's comfortable. You understand? But when you don't, then it'll always be the opposite. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, the guy's there and, you know, kids are growing up. He's Krishna conscious. He's out doing the things, collecting the money, spending all the time and all that. And then he figures out his daughter's about to get married. And that means she's going to go away and he's not going to regularly see her. So now all those times that he's missed out, he has to get that time now and everything. No, this is at the end. You know, just like you haven't been around all this time, you're supposed to be not around now also. You understand? So we do that. It's that when the kids are young, that's when we're all the pure devotees and Krishna conscious, always at the temple. And then when the kids grow up and they're teenagers and they go off doing whatever they're doing, then it's why aren't they around? Point is when they're young and that's the time to put in, that's when you put in. When they grow up and they're independent, that's when you can be independent. But people always do it the opposite. You know what I'm saying? It's options. You want options. You know, I could be there with the family and totally absorbed, but I'm taking the Krishna conscious option. But when it's like, hey, get out of here, old man. We don't, you know, who wants to talk to you? It's kind of, wait, what do you mean? You know, I'm a man, you know, something, it's not serious. You know, like that. It's so isn't it? Right? No? Yes.
Last week I didn't have any experience where I lost my people.
You lost your people.
My beadbag.
Your beadbag. Yes. Okay.
So I only had 60 rupees in my bag. I went to buy a beadbag, which unfortunately cost 135 rupees. So it means I was
185.
I asked the person at the counter to give me the beadbag in the beads so I could come, so I could chant. And I would say, I won't pay you. So we kind of like refused, saying, I'll show you the money. How would you describe the situation?
No, he's business, because the point is it's like this. This is happening here in Mayapur, right? And you're visiting, right? So that means technically you could go away and never come back again, right? And like that, there are thousands of people who come every day to Mayapur and probably poke their nose in his shop. You understand? So for business, he doesn't know you, doesn't know the situation, so therefore he has to stick to his business, right? Now, if you lived here and you're always going by a shop, he knows you and this and that, and then he refuses, then you could say that's a bit, you know, too businessy.
The other scenario is if you come back and pay,
you could, but you could also not. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's father, they were big landlords. Huge festivals, you know, all the big things that were happening in the village were all because his grandfather was paying for it. But so many people borrowed money and needed and all this that it came to a point where there was no facility. There was no more money. But because the grandfather's there, he'll manage it. You know what I'm saying? He'll keep things going because he's on top of it. But then when the plague came through and they all died, there is no money. Right? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his mother and sister, he was 12. He had to take them to Calcutta, get a job, you know, and figure out how to take care of them, get a sister married. Because he was giving in charity. Businesses, there's a certain amount you give in charity. But it's not because you say, it's because they feel like it. You know what I'm saying? It's business. You can't complain about that. If you're in the temple chanting japa and all that, and you know, that's another thing if you're dealing on that level. Or he's your friend and like that, and hey, I have to, can I use beads and stuff like that? That's another thing. But this is business. You know, business is business. Management is management. You know, so there is the personal element, but the personal also means is that they have a relationship. So he doesn't know you, doesn't have a relationship with you. So you can't expect If it's your own place and you know the guy and you have a relationship, then you could ask this and say, you know, why is it that business is taking precedent over, you know, personal relationship? But he doesn't know you. He doesn't know if you'll come back. And even if you say you'll come back, what happens if you go there and then something happens and then you have to take care of this and that? And so, you know, instead of coming back in 6 months like you planned, you don't come back for 6 years. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So that you can't say that it's going to happen like this. Right? Unless you take the full responsibility that even if you can't come back here, that guy is going to get his, you know, 125 rupees. You know, you're on the other side of the planet, you know, a devotee is going micro, you'll give it to him and say, here, give this to this guy and make sure and you know he's reliable and you check up that he did. I'm saying this is all part of that equation. Does that make sense? Okay. For those who are unable to decide their own status, there is the following advice. In the Bhagavad Gita 4:34, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains, just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Right? So that means they can explain what's there so you can establish. Also another aware of his own status means as servant of Krishna. So that means the materialist, though he's not aware of that, is not technically trustworthy. Because you don't know what they'll do. Their purpose is about themselves. And as long as everything's going great, it's fine. But if something goes wrong, they're not necessarily going to care. Right? So you have both aspects. Yes.
In this connection, this verse is often related to the mystic aspect of the advanced devotee who sees everything and knows everything. You correlate the mystic with ignorance.
Who sees it as mystic? Means there's a difference between mystic and mystique. I think maybe same spelling, but no, different spelling. Okay, mystique means that you don't know why. Mystic just means that there's some supernatural powers, but there's a reason for that, right? You know, the person is very powerful because he stood on his toes, you know, and didn't eat and breathe for so much time. That's why he has the mystic powers. You know, so you can see that mystique is you don't know why. There's something hiding it and all that, so. You know what I'm saying? So if it's in relationship to rasa, it's useful. If it's in relationship to tattva, it's not. You don't know why things work. That's not good. But if you can't, there's hidden things in the relationship, but it's done to create interest, then that's fine. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you know that there's a special dinner, but you don't know what, and when you ask, they won't tell you. So there's mystique, but that creates the excitement. It'll be good, and it'll be nice, and you'll be happy. You know, and in fact, they're probably doing it for you with special preparations that you like, but they don't want to, you know, they want to, you understand? But if the mystique is there and you can't understand and therefore you're confused, then that's basically useless. Make sense?
So Maharaj, we could say that the service is born from the nature, the conditioned nature.
The service is born from the conditioned nature. Yeah, you could say. It means you have a nature and it can be applied to add something to the community. Because that's what occupation is. Right? Vanaprastha, you're maintaining yourself as a vanaprastha. You're going out and collecting grains, but it's not technically called an occupation. You know what I'm saying? It's not within Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. It's within Brahminical. You know, so therefore it's part of ashram. Just like the brahmacharis go out begging. But that's not their occupation. Their occupation is that of menial service. So the vanaprastha's occupation is the cultivation of detachment. Right? That's his occupation. So Does that make sense? So one has to be able to discern, you know, because it's not meant for profit. It's just meant to, you know, maintain. Like that. You know, when it's meant for profit, that's called an occupation. Because you have facilities, you have to take care of a family. You're only taking care of yourself, you don't need profit. It doesn't have to get more and more. Just something's coming in and up that it works, that's in there. But if you have a family, family means it expands. You know, the mystical thing, kids grow up. You know? And somehow or another, at certain times it seems like it's going to take a million years, and at other times, that you know, what happened? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, when they're yelling and screaming and this and that, it takes forever. You know, when they're not, then it's like suddenly they're teenagers or they're getting married, and it's like, wow. You know. Okay. Does that make sense? Yes.
Those who are unable to decide their own status. So it is for Varna and Ashram?
Yeah, Varna and Ashram, and also between the... In other words, Varna Ashram means the conditioned situation and the natural and the constitutional. So all that means your status. You know? But here's what we're saying is that because he was giving the point about performing one's own duty, then that would imply if they can't figure out what is their duty, what would be the appropriate varnashram duties, then the spiritual master can give direction. Right? Like that. But then how to apply those, that makes a distinction now between mixed devotional service and pure devotional service, it's the same thing. The spiritual master can establish that. So it's dynamic, all these things. It applies, as we were saying, it applies all the way through. So it appears to change, but it's not. It's the same principles. Okay. Yes?
When you mean mixed devotional service and pure devotional service, the same way under the instruction of the spiritual master?
Mixed means... Mixed or pure, both are functioning under the spiritual master, but mixed means you're doing it for, you're doing it because of your own interest in it, but the results being given to Krishna. Pure means you're doing it to please Krishna. Right? You may be getting benefit, but that's not the reason you're doing it. You know, just like, I'm cooking lunch and you can also come along. But whether you came along or not, I'd cook lunch. Right? But the others, I'm cooking lunch for you. But in cooking, naturally, there's always something more, so I'll also get some, but that's not the reason I'm cooking. Does that make sense? So your karma yoga, jnana yoga, these are mixed devotional service. There's a mixed with karma and with jnana. But we look at it as progressive if you're taking it and the focus is on pleasing Krishna and developing for Krishna, even though we have our own attachments and that's the impetus to be involved. Then we'll call it karma yoga, jnana yoga. But if we are not so careful about the application and so we're allowing ourselves to get distracted by the secondary activities rather than focus on the primary, pleasing Krishna, then we'll call it jnana misra karma misra bhakti. It's the same thing. It's like, is the glass half full or half empty? The point it is both. It is half full, but it is half empty. You know what I'm saying? When you say, oh, well, why don't you see it that the glass is half full? It is half full, but it's still half empty. So pure devotional service means it's not half empty. Does that make sense?
So there is a possibility to follow Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī's instructions when he says śrāṇam bhakti uttama. One wants to strive for uttama bhakti.
The point is you're striving for uttama bhakti. That means you're practicing sadhana. And that means you're engaging your conditioned nature in the Lord's service. So it's mixed. But if you're able to see it that it's only for the Lord's service, then it doesn't matter. It's called pure. Right? The pure is not where we say it's Kali Yuga, we can't follow all these rules. Oh, don't be fanatic, Prabhu. Oh, I'm just being practical, Prabhu. Those are all statements of mixed devotional service. That's not Yukta Vairagya. Yukta means connected to the Lord. Vairagya means I'm detached from the results. That's the meaning. So when we're attached to the results and we don't want anyone to bother us, and if they bother us, we call them fanatic, and our excuse is that I'm just being practical, that's called mixed devotional service. Pure devotional service means you're doing it to please Krishna, even though it may be an area you like to do because of your conditioning. You're a cook, so you like to cook for Krishna. But it's not counted as mixed because the result is just for Krishna. So who's the result for? When they say it's Yukta Vairagya, who's getting the result? Right? So if Krishna is getting 100% of the result, it's called pure devotional service. But if you're getting part of that result, that's called mixed. It's that simple. It's you know what I'm saying? It's not rocket science. We try to keep it vague, either because we don't know or it makes it easy to cheat. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, by saying, oh, it's Yukta Vairagya, but what does that mean, Yukta Vairagya? You know what I'm saying? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't wear his coat and patent leather shoes, you know, just to go out for a walk. You know, and so people, you know, like that. He wore them when there'd be a program that it would be, people would respect him because he's dressed as a gentleman. That's the difference. So much of the time we say Yukta Vairagya, it's like, where was the Yukta and where was the Vairagya? He's doing his businesses at home, you never see him at the temple, never, like, where's the Yukta Vairagya? That's just called, you know, doing your duties. But when those are connected to Krishna, then it has some meaning. Does that make sense? The point is we have to be able to discriminate between the medium and the result. We can't discriminate. And then we have this habit that we use words how we like rather than how they're intended. You know? Because the point is when I say the glass is half empty, even though it's half full, then it's no, but then you're not inspired. But this is not a matter, but how do you inspire someone to go forward when you're just telling the glass is half full? But what about the other half? Then he'll stop at a, and then what you're doing is establishing a half full glass is good enough. So the point is that you have to encourage them that you've done this much, now you can do the rest. You filled it halfway, now you can do it. You can fill it the rest of the way. But I don't hear any liberals say that. Therefore, it's all just pure, unalloyed nonsense. It's just mundane. But they've taken it that, you know, the normal thing is that Krishna consciousness is good, and so anything that I perceive by my conditioned nature that's good is automatically Krishna conscious. That's the logic. Right? A is Krishna consciousness. B is how you say, let's see, how would you do it? A? Yeah. Okay, so Krishna consciousness is good, right? So, any activity that's good is Krishna conscious. Right? But who defines what's good? It's true, as long as the definition of good is Krishna's satisfaction. But there, it's as long as they're satisfied, then it's good. So therefore, they think that they're involved in Krishna conscious activities when they're not. That's what's being discussed here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out very carefully what's the difference between the actual pure devotion and what's the medium that's used. And that medium may be superior, which is, you know, the best quality ingredients and according to all the rules and regulations, or it may be inferior, it's not ideal. But it's still, whatever it is, really good or not so good, it's still not Krishna consciousness until it's connected. So generally speaking, is that your liberals and your conservatives are arguing over that which can be connected to the Lord. But generally in the argument you find the discussion, the connecting to the Lord is not the topic. The topic is that you have to be more liberal. No, you have to be more conservative. That's the real discussion. And that's why no one's satisfied by that discussion. That's why they can't come to a conclusion. Because you can only conclude something when Krishna is the end. Then everything's reconciled. Otherwise, in the world of duality, by arguing two sides of the same thing, you can't make anybody satisfied. You know what I'm saying? That's the topic. Does that make sense? Yes. But he's saying it's coming to Anukulyena Krishna Shilana. Means it has to be favorable to Krishna. So the point is it's favorable. See, that's why Rupa Goswami says it has to be Krishna conscious. It has to be favorable to Krishna. Then it has to be free from karma and jnana. Because it may be favorable to Krishna, but it's mixed with karma and jnana. But as long as it's favorable to Krishna and that's your determination, then that mix is just a matter of time before you get purified, it goes away. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if the person is just learning to ride the bicycle, right? So their mood is very, very humble and everything like that, and they're doing like that. So when the kid, you know, first starts to ride like that, you say, wow, well, look at, he's riding the bicycle. But, you know, but as far as anybody who's a serious bicycle rider, that's not riding a bicycle. Right, you know, that's basically not falling off a bicycle. You understand? So, but you'll see that positive side, because if they continue like that with that attitude, they will be riding a bicycle. But if after having done that much, then they're showing off, and yeah, I'm a great bicycle rider. You know, I'm just like, you know, this guy just won the, what do you call it? You know, the French, what was that called? That cross country one?
Tour de France.
Yeah, the Tour de France, like that. And they say, well, what is this India? What's this kid talking about? That's the difference. The one is called karma yoga, the second one is called karma misra. That's the point. The first one is honest and is progressive, the second one is a serious obstacle. Exactly the same thing. The situation's the same, the skill's the same, the results are the same, but the attitude is what makes the difference. So the only difference in anything is the attitude. But because of our training in the external, then we think if the externals are correct, everything's fine. We have a temple in a nice neighborhood, you know, like that, and, you know, a few nice things like this, and we have all the things that everybody thinks we should have. Then everything's Krishna conscious. No. It depends upon the mood, the attitude. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the... Yes, yes. Because in karma misra, you're more focused on the results, what your aspect and what you're going to gain from the results. You know what I'm saying? Less on Krishna, or may even sometimes forget. You know, in the long run, of course, you'll remember, but in the short term, you won't. But in karma yoga, then you're focusing on what Krishna's going to get. But you may not even realize what you're just taking for granted you're going to get out of it. Right? You know, like the cooks are cooking at the Sunday feast. But, you know, it's they're expecting, but not in the forefront of their mind, but the back of their mind, that they're going to get something to eat. You know what I'm saying? So if you said before, if it went and that the feast was so great, or more people came, or this or that, and so there was nothing left, that they can accept. But if before they started, you say, you know, we're only looking here for pure devotional service, Prabhu, we don't want any, you know, karma, Mr. Bhakti here, so you're going to cook the Sunday feast, but you're not going to get any. You can't have any. You know, you can't get anything. Like that. You know, what about some prasad from another offering? Nope, nope, because then that means you're doing it just for, you know, your payment, so therefore you're not going to get it. So if you agree to that, we'll take. Otherwise, you know, our standard will not be, you know. You know, and they'll just say, well, what's wrong with these guys? You know what I'm saying? So you're not. That's not your focus. You know, just like the guy, you know, he's just been on campus. He's walking by, sees the devotees, you know, like that, calls his girlfriend over. They go and listen to some philosophy. They walk off holding hands. They go, wow, that was great, and this and that. But what's he focusing on? He's focusing on the Krishna consciousness. He's not focusing on he's walking down the campus holding his girlfriend's hand. You understand? That's the difference. That's not the focus. But now the person has been in the temple, and then if he's walking with his girlfriend and holding hands, what is he focusing on? Right? Yeah, so that's the difference. So one has to be very, very careful to be able to distinguish the two. Situation's the same, but it's different. Just like Prabhupada gives the example, the devotee is going to the market, the karmi is going to the market. They're both doing the same thing, but one's Krishna conscious, one's not. So mixed means that, you know, it's a combination of both. But which one's the prominent? You know what I'm saying? So one will look at it as positive. The prominence is the cooking for Krishna. The other one, you're cooking for yourself. Does that make sense? You know, so when they're talking on these high levels of pure devotional service, then they're also the pitfalls much of the time are very subtle. They're not gross melodramatic. You know, it's not like, you know, if you do this then you become inimical towards Krishna. It's not meaning at the time you just grow fangs and horns and all that and, you know, start eating the devotees and stuff like that. It just means in the mind is, oh, you know what I'm saying? You're in your house, you're cooking something you really like to eat and all that. Hey, okay, time for dinner, it's like that. Did you make the offering? Oh no. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, I forgot, but at the same time as, oh my God, we have to do it. You know what I'm saying? So that's inimical. You're willing to do it, so that's, it's sadhana, it's not spontaneous. And so you know it should be done, so through your intelligence you're doing, but the mind was not favorable. So that's the meaning. It's not a gross thing, it's a subtle thing. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's what it's warning about, because those subtle things, if you don't catch them, those can grow. Right? So that's why that degree of subtlety is being presented, so that we can see. If you don't see it, don't worry about it. But if it's seen, then it's something one has to deal with. So the point is because the Krishna, he catches these, right? He's God, all right? Now you think about it. When you're talking, you're just sitting, relaxed, talking with the wife, like that, and How much does it take to throw the whole happy conversation completely 180 degrees? It took a whole, you know, you had to talk for half an hour of really gross, rough, and this and that. Or did it only take one word? Or even the word was okay, but the tone was wrong. So in other words, you're talking about something so subtle you didn't even catch it as it came out of your mouth. And someone with more attention goes, uh-oh, you know. But because they caught it, it won't be as bad. So they get a five-minute reaction instead of a three-hour, three-day reaction. But the guy who couldn't catch it, and what's wrong? And we were having such a good time. Why did he go like this? You know, then he's got problems. You understand? So that's the woman, right? So how all-pervasive is she? Right, he's in husband's life, pretty all pervasive, but still, but Krishna's all pervasive in all the husbands' lives. You know what I'm saying? So the point is when you're dealing with affection, it's that subtle. So that's what we're talking about. And we get caught up so much in just the externals of the gross occupation, who's doing what, and who's control of what, and who gets what benefit. Right? So, you know, so these parts of the scripture's definitions are pointing out these subtleties. That this is how fine is the path of you know, how you say, relationship, right? Like that.
the Western mind can contemplate this Oriental mind, which is so denuded with subtleties. I mean, myself, when I was admiring this Buddhist monk on the mountain or this Oriental person, I could see that once you get into the movement, even though I was always trying to go for the subtleties, it seems to pass. I would say it's one of the first forums which I can go into very tiny emotions.
But that's because you're doing it on your own when you want. It's like if you appreciate the Buddhist sitting on the mountain or not, you have no obligation. So therefore, you're free to do, and so because therefore you notice that it pleases you. But the other is that you actually have to be subtle, otherwise there's a problem. You know? Does that make sense? So that's where we don't notice. But just if you were to take it a step further, that you could probably say, you could probably notice that you still have that ability to notice the subtleties, that if it was some other man with his wife, you'd be able to see all the things he's doing wrong. Oops, shouldn't have said that. Oh, this. You could tell all that, but if it's you, because you're in the attachment, then you can't see it. Because that's the point that Gita says. Attachment means then one loses intelligence. And then from there, then one falls down. The point is you fall on your face. Now, whether you fell like by your own, how do you call it?
Volition.
Yeah, not even volition. Your own momentum or something. Or someone else gave you a push or a kick, you know, or as you were falling, opened the door, you know, so, you know, like that. Those are details. Like that. That are generally reserved for when you get there. Yeah, that's right, it's there. But it works for both. Because the thing is the man is thinking, this is so trying. The woman is thinking, this is so trying. You know, it's like, it's so trying. You're dealing with somebody who's so emotionally volatile. And they're thinking, it's so difficult living with such an idiot. You know what I'm saying? So vanaprastha works for both of them. You know, they're both happy when they can move on from that and just focus on Krishna and just, you know, like that. So it works for both. The reason you're suffering is because they're suffering. It's not that you're suffering and they're happy. They're suffering, but the difference is man doesn't share his suffering, generally. Women must share her suffering. Right, so it's because of affection she's sharing her suffering with you, and since you're the cause, then you're going to, you know, share very nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah, you know, so that's how it works. Sutra 47. Kam ye tara bhaktir na shasta chitta vikshay patvat anitya falatvach cha. When the devotional faculty of the jivas becomes degraded and misdirected towards various secondary entities other than the Supreme Lord, it produces mental distraction and temporary results. Yeah. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Here someone may protest. On the path of performing pious deeds, karma, where one worships the demigods, pitas, and others, many benefits are obtained. Why then do you say that this path of pious deeds is not good? Right? So he's saying very subtly, devotional faculty of the jiva becomes degraded and misdirected towards various secondary entities, right, because anything other than the attraction of the Lord is the secondary entity, right? Then it produces mental distraction and temporary results. But you can say, no, but everything's going very nice. We're making lots of money and everything like that. Why do you say that, you know, it's not right? You know, that's the point. Is it, we made the money. Why do you say it wasn't devotional? You know, it says, but temporary results. Did it result, is it going to result in an increase in Krishna consciousness? If it does, then it's great. But the point is one's mentally distracted, one's thinking of the secondary, one's focused there, and one's getting results from that secondary endeavor. Right? Because that's the point that'll come up. Here we're saying pious, because it's based on Shastra. The Westerners will say it's based on Vox Populi, right? That's the evidence. You know, how you say it? You know, how you say it? People, and people, right? Then that's your evidence, right? Not Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, right? You know, I thought it, right? And when I mentioned it to one friend, they agreed, right? So that's everybody. And then if I read something like that confirmed anywhere else in some article or something like that, then it's the world. Right? So there's your evidence. Okay, why then do you say that this path of piety is not good? Right? Because now we're approaching from the other side. Before we're looking at it from pure devotional service and showing it. Now we're looking at it from the other side on in application that somebody is attached to the distraction. Because you've already said that it's a distraction, so therefore if you understand this, you focus on the devotional. And the secondary isn't a distraction. It may be there, but it's not a distraction. But here it's now, when one is focusing too much on the secondary, it becomes a distraction, but you're getting good material results. And as we said before, devotional services, God is good, so therefore anything good is God. So therefore, you know, all materially everything's going nice, the family's way, you know, I came home, the wife was nice, you know, the kids got good marks in school, we didn't have to go and talk to the principal again. You know, the neighbors, you know, decided not to, you know, harass about the fence line. And it's all great, you know, so it's all, you know, God's good, everything's happening, it's great, I'm situated nicely Krishna consciously, right? But there wasn't one word in that whole thing that actually described anything Krishna conscious. Right? So when that happens, and then we say, well, hey, what about, no, but what, you know, then the reaction, that no, that mentality is okay. So that's what he's dealing with. Fearing that someone would raise this protest, the author speaks this sutra. Here the word kamya means the results of lusty desires, and itara means other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Kamyetara. Kamye tara, I think tara means other, right? Bhaktir, tara, outside, like tara, you get rid of something. Here some may protect, okay, fearing, okay. Itara, other than the Supreme. Devotional service offered to any one of the many millions of individual souls is not recommended by the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For such devotion merely agitates the mind. There are many, many demigods and pitas and others, many, many Shruti and Smriti scriptures describing them, many, many rules and regulations to follow, and many, many different kinds of yajnas and worship offered to them. All this keeps the worshipper very, very busy in many, many different kinds of activities. In this way, the worshipper's mind becomes, should be very, very agitated, and he becomes influenced by the material mode of passion. Right? So, we'll think, I'm doing all my duties, I'm doing everything right, I'm doing everything according to Shastra, what's the problem? But the problem is we're not remembering Krishna. But if we add Krishna, that's all. So this is the balance, right? Is that proper performance of duties, remembering Krishna is all it takes. Right? That's all it takes. But then we can get into, we don't have to perform duties because it's remembering Krishna. And therefore, we just are independent and do whatever we, you know, our mind dictates. Or we followed all the rules and regulations, therefore we're Krishna conscious. The one is, I'm doing all this, therefore just my mental speculation is Krishna consciousness, or the rules of Krishna consciousness. So that's your difference. Conservative means, I follow all the rules, that's Krishna consciousness. And liberal means, whatever I think up and think is good, that's Krishna consciousness. Right? And you want to know the interesting thing is following all the rules and engaging the rules means engaging the senses, means it's the intelligence. Right? And the other one where I'm just going by what I feel like, that's the mind. Right? But the liberals consider themselves to be intellectuals, and they consider the conservatives to be not very well, you know, understanding. They'll probably check most of those conservatives have very good academic degrees. You know what I'm saying? But so the thing is they're smart. That's why they're able to follow the rules. They can discriminate. Well, the other one can't follow the rules, therefore they speculate. But they try to cover it up by saying, no, that freedom is the higher principle. You know, so they're mistaking that, you know, yes, that spontaneity is higher when it's based on vaidhi. But if rag is not based on vaidhi, it's not higher, it's lower. Does that make sense? You know, because it's dangerous in that it takes you farther away. At the same time, is because it is just the mind, if you can convince them about Krishna, then they're totally absorbed. While the person who is pious and regulated in that, then it's very hard to give up the attachment to, you know, all that, all the piety.
That's why the sannyasa takes a long time.
Yeah. Like that. So you have to deal with both. But because the other one, he may take it up quickly, but he can leave quickly. You know? Those who are very regulated and used to all these things, it takes much longer for them to take Krishna consciousness seriously. What would they do? They stay. But those who just work on the emotional, they'll take it up like that, but they'll leave like that. You know, that's it. So each has their strength, each has their weakness. So the point is a balance means that you have the ability to see the inspired element of, you know, consistent endeavor. That will be better, because then it's the proper combination of the mind and the intelligence. Right? Okay. Not sure what happens. Sometimes we go through things quickly, and sometimes it goes real, real. I guess it's the nature of what we're talking about. Oh, okay. Then we have a few more pages of this. Then we have Atmatattva's points.
Sometimes it is discussion about pure devotion, so this, sometimes not. It's like.
Yeah, because of both. It means because the pure devotion means, but you can only be situated on that platform if one's not attached to the material world. So you have to discuss how to get out of the material world and at the same time how to get into the spiritual world. So you'll have both. You know, so we'll go back and forth from, you know, the nice descriptions of, you know, the bodily, the beauty of Krishna, you know, and then, you know, these little technical little like that. So that's the. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Generally it is, because we go and set up in the temple and everything. I'm not sure what time they start. Because the Abhishek's like at 11, I think, generally. If not earlier, but then they set up beforehand. Yeah, I forgot about that. Probably the best would to be to say that there isn't something, because I don't know what's exactly happening in the morning. Because, like that. You know, so I would say just because there'll probably be a special temple program anyway. You know, the darshan and the other things and all that. So, yeah. So I would just say, okay. So then, Friday, yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nityananda ki.